Henry IV is gravely ill. His son, Prince John, having defeated the Archbishop of York with a skillfully executed trick, has hurried south to be close to his father. Sir John Falstaff, who has gained even greater military honors by capturing a notorious rebel leader single-handed, has hurried west to the home of Justice Shallow, a wealthy Gloucestershire landowner. On his arrival, he is welcomed as a hero. But when shortly afterwards he announces he must leave, Shallow, who intends to take advantage of his friendship with Sir John to foster his own advancement at court, is at great pains to persuade him to stay.
By cock and pie, Sir John, you shall not away tonight. What, Davy, I say?
You must excuse me, Master Robert Shallow.
I will not excuse you. You shall not be excused. Excuses shall not be admitted. There is no excuse shall serve. You shall not be excused. Why, Davy?
Yes, sir?
Davy. Let me see, Davy. Ah, yea, Mary. William Cook. Bid him come hither. Sir John, you shall not be excused. yes, Davy, some pigeons. Hmm? A couple of short-legged hens, a joint of mutton, and any pretty little tiny kickshaws. Hmm? Tell William Cook.
Does the man of war stay all night, sir?
Sir John. Yes, Davy, yes, I will use him well. A friend in the court is better than a penny in purse. Use his men well, Davy, for they are arrant knaves and will backbite.
No worse than their backbitten, sir, for they have marvellous foul limbs.
Well conceited, Davy. About thy business, Davy.
I beseech you, sir, to countenance William Visor of Wancott against Clement Parks of the Hill.
There is many complaints, Davy, against that Visor. That Visor is an arrant knave, and my knowledge.
I grant your worship that he's a knave, sir. But yet, God forbid, sir, but a knave should have some countenance at his friend's request. Honest man, sir, is able to speak for himself when a knave is not.
Go to, he
I
shall
have served your worship truly, sir, this 8 years. I cannot once or twice in a quarter bear out a knave against an honest man, I have but very little credit with your worship.
The knave
is mine honest friend, sir. Therefore, I beseech your worship, let him be countenanced.
Go to, I say, he shall have no wrong. Spread, Davy. Spread. Where are you, Sir John? Come. Off with your boots. Come, Sir John. Come.
Then I'll follow you, Master Shallow. It's a wonderful thing to see the simple coherence between this justice and his men. They, by observing of him, do bear themselves like foolish justices. He, by conversing with them, is turned into a justice-like serving man. I will devise matter enough out of this Shallow to keep Prince Harry in continual laughter the wearing out of sick fashions, and I shall laugh without intervallums. It is much that a lie with a slight oath and a jest with a sad brow will do with a fellow that never had the ache in his shoulders.
John!
Aye, come, Master Shallow.
Sir John!
I come, Master Shallow.
Among the silent courtiers waiting outside the Jerusalem chamber at Westminster for news of the king's progress is the Lord Chief Justice, who some years previously was forced to send the heir apparent, Prince Hal, to prison after an incident in which the prince boxed his ears. Like many others in the land, he hardly dare contemplate what will happen if the king should die. When he sees the Earl of Warwick's grief-stricken face, he fears the worst and turns to leave.
How now, my Lord Chief Justice? Whither away?
How doth the king?
Exceeding well. His cares are now all ended.
I hope not dead.
He's walked the way of nature, and to our purposes he lives no more.
I would his majesty had called me with him. The service that I truly did his life hath left me open to all injuries.
Indeed, I think the young king loves you not.
I know he doth not. And to arm myself to welcome the condition of the time, which cannot look more hideously upon me than I have drawn it in my fantasy.
Here comes the heavy issue of dead Harry.
Oh, God. I fear all will be overturned.
Good morrow, Cousin Warwick. Good morrow.
Good morrow, Cousin.
Good morrow, Cousin.
We meet like men that had forgot to speak.
We do remember, but our argument is all too heavy to admit much talk.
Well, peace be with him that hath made us heavy.
Peace be with us, lest we be heavier.
Oh, good my lord, you have lost a friend indeed. And I dare swear you borrow not that face of seeming sorrow. It is sure your own.
Though no man be assured what grace to find, you stand in coldest expectation. I am the sorrier. Would to otherwise.
Well, you must now speak Sir John Falstaff fair, which swims against your stream of quality.
Sweet princes, what I did in honor, led by the impartial conduct of my soul. And never shall you see that I will beg a ragged and forestalled remission. If truth and upright innocency fail me, I'll to the king, my master, that is dead, and tell him who hath sent me after him.
Here comes the prince.
Good morrow. And God save your majesty.
God save your majesty.
This new and gorgeous garment, majesty, sits not so easy on me as you think. Brothers, you mix your sadness with some fear. This is the English, not the Turkish court. Not Amurath, and Amurath succeeds. But Harry... Harry. Yet be sad, good brothers, for by my faith it very well becomes you. Sorrow so royally in you appears that I will deeply put the fashion on and wear it in my heart. Why then be sad? But entertain no more of it, good brothers, than a joint burden laid upon us all. For me, by heaven, I bid you be assured, I'll be your father and your brother too. Let me but bear your love, I'll bear your cares. Yet weep that Harry's dead, and so will I. But Harry lives, that shall convert those tears by number into hours of happiness.
We hope no otherwise from your majesty.
You all look strangely on me. And you most. You are, I think, assured I love you not.
I am assured, if I be measured rightly, your majesty hath no just cause to hate me.
No? How might a prince of my great hopes forget so great indignities you laid upon me? What? Rate, rebuke, and roughly send to prison the immediate heir of England? Was this easy? May this be washed in Lethe and forgotten?
I then did use the person of your father. The image of his power lay then in me, and in the administration of his law. Whiles I was busy for the Commonwealth, your Highness pleased to forget my place, the majesty and power of law and justice, the image of the king whom I presented, and struck me in my very seat of judgment. Whereon, as an offender to your father, I gave bold way to my authority and did commit you. If the deed were ill, be you contented, wearing now the garland, to have a son set your decrees at naught, to pluck down justice from your awful bench, to trip the course of law and blunt the sword that guards the peace and safety of your person. Nay more, to spurn at your most royal image and mock your workings in a second body. Question your royal thoughts. Make the case yours. Be now the father and propose a son. Hear your own dignity so much profaned. See your most dreadful laws so loosely slighted. Behold yourself so by a son disdained. And then imagine me taking your part and in your power soft silencing your son. After this cold considerance, sentence me. And as you are a king, speak in your state what I have done that misbecame my place, my person, or my liege's sovereignty.
You are right, Justice. And you weigh this well. Therefore, still bear the balance and the sword. And I do wish your honors may increase till you do live to see a son of mine offend you and obey you, as I did. So shall I live to speak my father's words. Happy am I that have a man so bold that dares do justice on my proper son. There's my hand. You shall be as a father to my youth. My voice shall sound as you do prompt mine ear, and I will stoop and humble my intents to your well-practiced, wise directions. And, princes all, believe me, I beseech you, my father is gone wild into his grave, for in his tomb lie my affections. And with his spirit, sadly, I survive to mock the expectation of the world, to frustrate prophecies and to raise out rotten opinion, who hath writ me down after my seeming. The tide of blood in me hath proudly flowed in vanity till now. Now doth it turn and ebb back to the sea, where it shall mingle with the state of floods and flow henceforth in formal majesty. Now call we our High Court of Parliament, and let us choose such limbs of noble counsel that the great body of our state may go in equal rank with the best governed nation, that war or peace or both at once may be as things acquainted and familiar to us, in which you, Father, shall have foremost hand. Our coronation done, we will excite, as I before remembered, all our state, and God consigning to my good intents, no prince nor peer shall have just cause to say, God shorten Harry's happy life one day.
Nay, Sir John, you shall see my orchard, where in an arbour we will eat a last year's pippin of my own grafting, with a dish of caraways and so forth. Come, Cousin Silas, and then to bed.
Before God, you have here a goodly dwelling and a rich...
Barren. Beggars all, Sir John. Ah, Mary, good air. Spread, Davy. Ah, well said, Davy.
Yes, Davy serves you for good uses. He's your serving man and your husband.
A good varlet. A very good varlet, Sir John. By the mass, I think I've drunk too much sack at supper. A good varlet. Now sit down. Come, cousin Silas.
Sir Corsa, we shall do nothing but eat and make good cheer and praise God for the merry year when flesh is deep and females dear and lusty lads roam here and there. So merrily and ever among so merrily.
Well, there's a merry heart, good Master Silence. I'll give you a health for that.
My wife says all for women are shrews, both short and tall. Tis merry and all when beers red low, and welcome merry showtime. Be merry.
I did not think Master Silence had been a man of this mettle.
I've been merry twice, and once now. Oh, yes, and we shall be merry now comes in the sweet of the night.
Health and long life to you, Master Silence.
Fill the cup and let it come. I'll pledge you a mile to the bottle.
Honest Bardolph, welcome. If thou wantst anything and will not call, beshrew thy heart. I'll drink to Master Bardolph and to all the caballeros about London.
I hope to see London once ere I die.
And I might see you there, Davy.
By the mass, you'll crack a court together. Oh. Will you not, Master Bardolph?
Yes, sir, in a pottle pot.
I thank thee. The knave will stick by thee, I can assure thee that. He will not out, eh? Tis true bread.
And I'll stick by him.
Why, there spoke a king. I'll lack nothing. Be merry.
Look, who's at door there, Davy? Who knocks? You be right to dump me like Samingo.
Samingo?
It's not so.
It is so.
Oh, yes. Why, then, say an old man can do some work.
Indeed, Your Worship, there's one pistol come from the court with news.
What, from the court? Let him come in. Now, pistol.
Sir John, God save you.
What wind blew you hither, pistol?
Not the ill wind which blows no man to good. Sweet knight, thou art now one of the greatest men in this realm.
My lady, I think of me but a good man, Puff of Boston.
Puff, puffy thy teeth, most recreant coward base. Sir John, I am thy pistol and thy friend, and helter-skelter have I rode to thee, and tidings do I bring, lucky joys, and golden times, and happy news of Christ.
I pray thee now deliver them like a man of this world.
A footer for the world and worldling's base. I speak of Africa and golden joys.
O base Assyrian knight, what is thy news? Let King Cophetua know the truth thereof.
And Robin Hood, Scarlet and John.
Shall dunghill curs confront the helicons, and shall good news be baffled? Then, pistol, lay thy head in fury's...
Now, honest gentlemen, I know not your breeding.
Why, then, lament, therefore.
Give me pardon, sir. If, sir, you come with news from the court, I take it there's but two ways. Either to utter them or conceal them. I am, sir, under the king in some authority.
Under which king, Bessonian? Speak or die.
Under King Harry.
Harry the fourth or fifth?
Harry the fourth.
A footer for thine office. Sir John... Thy tender lambkin now is king.
What?
Harry the fifth's the man.
No, God.
I speak the truth. When pistol lies, do this and fig me like the bragging Spaniard.
What? Is the old king dead?
As nail in door. The things I speak are just.
Away, Bardolph. Saddle my horse. Master Robert Shallow, choose what office thou wilt in the land. 'Tis thine. Pistol, I will double charge thee with dignities.
Oh, joyful day. I would not take a knighthood for my fortune.
What do I bring you?
Carry Master Silence to bed, Master Shallow. My Lord Shallow, be what thou wilt. I am fortune's steward. Get on thy boots, we'll ride all night. Oh, sweet pistol. Away, Bardolph. Come, pistol, utter more to me. And withal, devise something to do thyself good. Boot, Master Shallow. I know the young king is sick for me. Let us take any man's horses. The laws of England are at my commandment. Blessed are they that have been my friends. And woe to my Lord Chief Justice. Stand here by me, Master Robert Shallow. I will make the king do you grace. I will leer upon him as it comes by, and do but mark the countenance that he will give me.
God bless thy lungs, good night.
Come here, pistol. Stand behind me. No, Master Shallow. If I had time to have made new liveries, I would have bestowed the £1,000 I borrowed of you. But 'tis no matter. This poor show doth best. This doth infer the zeal I had to see him.
It doth so.
It shows my earnestness of affection.
It doth so.
My devotion.
It doth.
As it were to ride day and night, and not to deliberate, not to remember, not to have patience to shift me.
No, it is best, sir.
But to stand stained with travel and sweating with desire to see him, thinking of nothing else, putting all affairs else in oblivion, as if there were nothing else to be done but to see him.
Tis so indeed.
There roar the sea, and trumpet clangor sounds.
Pilot! 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 Enrightus! Quintus! Quintus! Enrightus! Quintus!
is King Hal, my royal Hal.
The heavens thee guard and keep, most royal imperfane.
God save thee, my sweet boy.
My lord Chief Justice, speak to that vain man.
Have you your wits? Know you what 'tis you speak?
My king, my Jove, I speak to thee, my heart.
I know thee not, old man. Fall to thy prayers. How ill white hairs becomes a fool and jester. I have long dreamt of such a kind of man, so surfeit swelled, so old and so profane. But being awaked, I do despise my dream. Make less thy body hence, and more thy grace. Leave gormandizing. No, the grave doth gape for thee thrice wider than for other men. Reply not to me with a full-born jest. Presume not that I am the thing I was. For God doth know, so shall the world perceive, that I have turned away my former self. So will I those that kept me company. When thou dost hear I am as I have been, approach me, and thou shalt be as thou wast, the tutor and the feeder of my riots. Till then, I banish thee on pain of death, as I have done the rest of my misleaders, not to come near our person by 10 miles. For competence of life I will allow you, that lack of means enforce you not to evils. And as we hear you do reform yourselves, we will, according to your strengths and qualities, give you advancement. Be it your charge, my Lord Chief Justice, to see performed the tenor of my word.
My Lord.
Set on.
Master Shallow, I owe you £1,000.
Yea, marry, Sir John, which I beseech you to let me have home with me.
That can hardly be, Master Shallow. Do not you grieve at this. I shall be sent for in private to him. Look, he must seem thus to the world. Fear not your advancements. I will be the man that shall make you great.
I cannot perceive how, unless you give me your doublet and stuff me out with straw. I beseech you, good Sir John, let me have 500 of my 1,000.
Sir, I will be as good as my word. Oh, this that you heard was but a colour.
A colour that I fear you will die in, Sir John.
Fear no colours. Go with me to dinner. Come, Lieutenant Pistol.
Sir John.
Come, Bardolph. I shall be sent for soon at night.
Carry Sir John Falstaff to prison. Huh? Take all his company along with him.
My lord! My lord!
I cannot now speak. I will hear you soon. Take them away.
I like this fair proceeding of the king's. He hath intent his wonted followers shall all be very well provided for, but all are banished till their conversations appear more wise and modest to the world.
And so they are.
The king hath called his parliament, my lord.
He hath.
I will lay odds that ere this year expire, we bear our civil swords and native fire as far as France. I heard a bird so sing, whose music to my thinking pleased the king.
Falstaff's rejection and the king's quiet but determined behavior has astonished everyone in the realm. Furthermore, his essential grasp of all aspects of government policy has impressed both the clergy and the nobility. Rapidly uniting the people behind him, the king, as his brother prophesied, turns his attentions towards France in the belief that if he can recapture those lands formerly held by his great-grandfather, Edward III, he will be able to overcome the continued threat of civil disturbances. Across the Channel, The French are amused by the sudden volte-face of the playboy prince, and, taking matters into his own hands, the French king's son, the Dauphin, sends a present to Henry, hoping to humiliate him in front of his peers. Before receiving the ambassadors from the Dauphin, Henry has summoned a full parliament to the Great Hall at Westminster, where he has invited the Archbishop of Canterbury to explain the English right to the French crown.
My learned Lord Archbishop, pray proceed, and justly and religiously unfold why the law Salic that they have in France, or should not, bar us in our claim to hold again the crown and seat of France, derived from Edward, my great-grandfather. And God forbid, my dear and faithful Lord, that you should fashion, rest, or bow your reading, or nicely charge your understanding soul with opening titles miscreate, whose right suits not in native colours with the truth. For God doth know how many now in health shall drop their blood in approbation of what your reverence shall incite us to. Therefore take heed how you imporn our person, how you awake our sleeping sword of war. Under this conjuration, speak, my lord, for we will hear, note, and believe in heart that what you speak is in your conscience washed as pure as sin with baptism.
Then hear me, gracious sovereign, and you peers that owe yourselves your lives and services to this imperial throne. There is no bar to make against your highness' claim to France, but this, which they produce from Pharamond. In terram salicem mulieres ne succedent. No woman shall succeed in Salic land, which Salic land the French unjustly glows to be the realm of France, and Pharamond the founder of this law and female bar. Yet their own authors faithfully affirm that the land Salic is in Germany, between the floods of Sala and of Elbe, where Charles the Great, having subdued the Saxons, there left behind and settled certain French, who, holding in disdain the German women for some dishonest manners of their life, established then this law, to wit, no female shall be an heretrix in Salic land. Which Salic, as I said, twixt Elbe and Sala, is at this day in Germany called Meissen. Then doth it well appear the Salic law was not devised for the realm of France, nor did the French possess the Salic land until 421 years after defunction of King Pharamond, idly supposed the founder of this law, who died within the year of our redemption, 426. And Charles the Great subdued the Saxons and did seat the French beyond the river Sala in the year 805. Besides, their writers say, King Pepin, which deposed Childeric, did as heir general, being descended of Blithild, which was daughter to King Clothair, make claim and title to the crown of France. Hugh Capet also, who usurped the crown of Charles the Duke of Lorraine, sole heir male of the true line and stock of Charles the Great, to find his title with some shows of truth, though in pure truth it was corrupt and naught, conveyed himself as there to the Lady Linga, daughter to Charlemagne, who was the son to Louis the Emperor, and Louis the son of Charles the Great. Also, King Louis the Tenth, who was sole heir to the usurper Capet, could not keep quiet in his conscience, wearing the crown of France, till satisfied that fair Queen Isabel, his grandmother, was lineal of the Lady Ermengarde, daughter to Charles, the foresaid Duke of Lorraine, by the which marriage the line of Charles the Great was reunited to the crown of France. So that, as clear as is the summer's sun, King Pepin's title and Hugh Capet's claim, King Louis his satisfaction, all appear to hold in right and title of the female. So do the kings of France unto this day. Howbeit they would hold up this Salic law to bar your highness claiming from the female, and rather choose to hide them in a net than amply to embear their crooked titles usurped from you and your progenitors.
May I, with right and conscience, make this claim?
The sin upon my head, dread sovereign. For in the Book of Numbers is it writ, when the man dies, let the inheritance descend unto the daughter. Gracious Lord, stand for your own, unwind your bloody flag, look back into your mighty ancestors. Go, my dread lord, to your great-grandsire's tomb, from whom you claim. Invoke his warlike spirit, and your great-uncle's, Edward the Black Prince, who on the French ground played a tragedy, making defeat on the full power of France, whilst his most mighty father on a hill stood smiling to behold his lion's whelp forage in blood of French nobility. Oh, noble English, that could entertain with half their forces the full pride of France, and let another half stand laughing by, all out of work and cold for action.
Your brother kings and monarchs of the earth do all expect that you should rouse yourself, as did the former lions of your blood.
They know your grace hath cause and means and might.
So hath your highness. Never king of England had nobler, richer, and more loyal subjects, whose hearts have left their bodies here in England and lie pavilioned in the fields of France.
Oh, let their bodies follow, my dear liege, with blood and sword and fire to win your right. In aid whereof, we of the spirituality will raise your highness such a mighty sum as never did the clergy at one time bring in to any of your ancestors.
We must not only arm to invade the French, but lay down our proportions to defend against the Scots, who will make road upon us with all advantages.
They of those marches, gracious sovereign, shall be a wall sufficient to defend our inland from the pilfering borderers.
We do not mean the coursing snatchers only, but fear the main intendment of the Scot, who hath been still a giddy neighbour to us. For you shall read that my great-grandfather never went with his forces into France, but that the Scot on his unfurnished kingdom came pouring like the tide into a breach, with ample and brim fullness of his force, galling the gleaned land with hot assays, girding with grievous siege castles and towns, that England, being empty of defence, hath shook and trembled at the ill neighbourhood.
She hath been then more feared than harmed, my liege. For hear her but exampled by herself, when all her chivalry hath been in France, and she a mourning widow of her nobles, she hath herself not only well defended, but taken and impounded as a stray the King of Scots, whom she did send to France to fill King Edward's fame with prisoner kings and make her chronicle as rich with praise as is the ooze and bottom of the sea with sunken wreck and sumless treasuries.
But there's a saying very old and true. If that you will France win, then with Scotland first begin. For once the eagle England being in prey, to her unguarded nest the weasel Scot comes sneaking and so sucks her princely eggs, playing the mouse in absence of the cat to tame and havoc more than she can eat.
It follows then the cat must stay at home. Yet that is but a crushed necessity, since we have locks to safeguard necessaries and pretty traps to catch the petty thieves. While that the armed hand doth fight abroad, the advised head defends itself at home. For government, though high and low and lower, put into parts, doth keep in one consent, congreeing in a full and natural close, like music.
Therefore doth heaven divide the state of man in divers functions, setting endeavour in continual motion, to which is fixed as an aim or butt, obedience. For so work the honeybees, creatures that by a rule in nature teach the act of order to a peopled kingdom. They have a king and officers of sorts, where some, like magistrates, correct at home, others, like merchants, venture trade abroad, others, like soldiers, armed in their stings, make boot upon the summer's velvet buds, which pillage they with merry march bring home to the tent royal of their emperor, who, busied in his majesty, surveys the singing masons building roofs of gold, the civil citizens kneading up the honey, the poor mechanic porters crowding in their heavy burdens at his narrow gate, the sad-eyed justice with his surly hum, delivering o'er to executors pale the lazy, yawning drone. I this infer that many things, having full reference to one consent, may work contrariously. As many arrows loosed several ways come to one mark, as many several ways meet in one town, as many fresh streams meet in one salt sea, as many lines close in the dial's center, so may a thousand actions, once afoot, end in one purpose, and be all well born without defeat. Therefore, to France, my liege, divide your happy England into four, whereof take you one quarter into France, and you withal shall make all Gallia shake. If we, with thrice such powers left at home, cannot defend our own doors from the dog, let us be worried, and our nation lose the name of hardiness and policy.
Call in the messenger sent from the Dauphin.
My liege.
Now are we well resolved. And by God's help and yours, the noble sinews of our power, France being ours, we'll bend it to our awe or break it all to pieces. Or there we'll sit ruling in large and ample empery, or France and all her almost kingly dukedoms. Or lay these bones in an unworthy urn, tombless with no remembrance over them.
The ambassadors from France, my gracious liege.
Now are we well prepared to know the pleasure of our fair cousin Dauphin? For we hear your greeting is from him, not from the king.
May it please your majesty to give us leave freely to render what we have in charge? Or shall we sparingly show you far off the Dauphin's meaning and our embassy?
We are no tyrant, but a Christian king. Therefore, with frank and with uncurbed plainness, tell us the Dauphin's mind.
Thus then, in few. Your highness, lately sending into France, did claim some certain dukedoms in the right of your great predecessor, King Edward III. In answer of which claim, the prince, our master, says that you savor too much of your youth and bids you be advised. There's naught in France that can be with a nimble galliard one. You cannot revel into dukedoms there. He therefore sends you meter for your spirit, this ton of treasure. And in lieu of this, desires you let the dukedoms that you claim hear no more of you. This the Dauphin speaks.
What treasure, uncle?
Tennis balls, my liege.
We are glad the Dauphin is so pleasant with us. His present and your pains, we thank you for. When we have matched our rackets to these balls, we will in France, by God's grace, play a set, shall strike his father's crown into the hazard. Tell him he hath made a match with such a wrangler that all the courts of France will be disturbed with chases. And we understand him well how he comes o'er us with our wilder days, not measuring what use we made of them. But tell the Dauphin I will keep my state, be like a king, and show my sail of greatness when I do rouse me in my throne of France. For that I have laid by my majesty and plodded like a man for working days. But I will rise there with so full a glory that I will dazzle the eyes of France. Yea, strike the Dauphin blind to look on us. And tell the pleasant prince this mock of his hath turned his balls to gunstones, and his soul shall stand sore charged for the wasteful vengeance that shall fly with them. For many a thousand widows shall this his mock mock out of their dead husbands, mock mothers from their sons, mock castles down, and some are yet ungotten and unborn that shall have cause to curse the Dauphin's scorn. But this lies all within the will of God, to whom I do appeal, and in whose name tell you the Dauphin, I am coming on to venge me as I may, and to put forth my rightful hand in a well-hallowed cause. So get you hence in peace. And tell the Dauphin his jest will savour but of shallow wit, when thousands weep more than did laugh at it. Convey them with safe conduct, fare you well.
This was a merry message.
We hope to make the sender blush at it. Therefore, let our proportions for these wars be soon collected, and all things thought upon that may with reasonable swiftness add more feathers to our wings. For God before, we'll chide this Dauphin at his father's door.
Oh, for a muse of fire that would ascend the brightest heaven of invention, a kingdom for a stage, princes to act, and monarchs to behold the swelling scene. Then should the warlike Harry, like himself, assume the port of Mars, and at his heels, leashed in like hounds, should famine, sword, and fire crouch for employment. But pardon, gentles all, the flat unraised spirit that hath dared on this unworthy scaffold to bring forth so great an object. Can this cockpit hold the vasty fields of France? Or may we cram within this wooden O the very casks that did affright the air at Agincourt? Oh, pardon, since a crooked figure may attest in little place a million. And let us ciphers to this great account on your imaginary forces work. Suppose within the girdle of these walls are now confined two mighty monarchies whose high, upreared, and abutting fronts the perilous narrow ocean parts asunder. Piece out our imperfections with your thoughts. Into a thousand parts divide one man and make imaginary puissance. Think when we talk of horses that you hear them printing their proud hoofs in the receiving earth. For 'tis your thoughts that now must deck our kings, carry them here and there, jumping o'er times, turning the accomplishment of many years into an hourglass. For the which supply, admit me, chorus, to this history.
Among those preparing to embark for France are the survivors of Falstaff's former entourage. The old knight, despite a brave face, has been mortally hurt by his public humiliation, and now he lies in his room at the Boar's Head Tavern. Ancient Pistol, seeing a chance to capitalize on Falstaff's downfall, has just married Mistress Quickly, and now they are both returning in splendor from their wedding. Corporal Nim, however, waiting in a street near the Boar's Head, does not share the wedding day pleasure, believing that he should have married Mistress Quickly had it not been for Pistol's thieving intervention. As Nim waits in a somewhat edgy mood, Bardolf approaches.
Well met, Corporal Nim.
Good morrow, Lieutenant Bardolf.
What, are Ancient Pistol and you friends yet?
Now, for my part, I care not. I say little. I dare not fight. But I will wink and hold out mine iron. That is my rest, and that is the rendezvous of it.
It is certain, Corporal, that Pistol has married Nell Quickly, and certainly she did you wrong, for you were troth plight to her.
I cannot tell. Things must be as they may. Men may sleep, and they may have their throats about them at that time. And some say knives have edges. Yeah, it must be as it may. No patience be a tired mare, yet you will plod. There must be conclusions. Well, I cannot tell.
Here comes Ancient Pistol and his wife. Good Corporal, be patient there.
Now, mine host, Pistol.
Base tyke. Call'st thou me host? Now, by this hand, I swear I scorn the term. Nor shall my Nell keep lodgers.
No, by my troth, not long, for we cannot lodge and board a dozen or 14 gentlewomen that live honestly by the prick of their needles before we keep a bawdy house straight. Well, a day, lady, if Nim be not drawn now, we shall see wilful adultery and murder committed.
Good Lieutenant, good Corporal, offer nothing here.
Pish! Pish! For thee, Iceland dog, thou tricky-eyed cur of Iceland.
Oh, good Corporal Nim, show thy valour and put up your sword.
Will you shog off? I would have you soulless.
Soulless, egregious dog. Oh, viper vile, I do retort the soulless in thy bowels, for I can take, and Pistol's cock is up, and flashing fire will follow.
I will cut thy throat one time or other in fair terms. That is the humour of it.
Oh, hound of Crete. Think'st thou my spouse to get? No, to the brothel go, and from the powdering tub of infamy fetch forth the lazarkite of Cressid's kind, dull tear sheet, she by name, and her espouse.
I have, and I will hold the quandum quickly. Go to!
Pistol! Pistol! Mine host, Pistol! You must come to my master, Falstaff, and you, hostess. Oh? He is very sick and would to bed. Oh, good Bardolph, put thy face between his sheets and do the office of a warming pan. Oh. Faith, he's very ill.
Away, you rogue.
By my troth, he'll yield the crow a pudding one of these days. The king has killed his heart. Good husband, come home presently. Mm. Is he still in a fit?
Come, shall I make you two friends? We must to France together. Why the devil should we keep knives to cut one another's throats?
Let floods or swell and fiends for food howl on.
You'll pay me the 8 shillings on one of your betting.
There, base is the slave that pays.
That now I will have, that's the humour of it.
As mangled shall compound, push home.
By this sword, he that makes the first thrust, I'll kill him. Huh? By this sword, I will.
An oath of mickle might and fury shall abate.
Corporal Nim, and thou wilt be friends, be friends. And thou wilt not, why then, be enemies with me too. Prithee, put up.
I shall have my 8 shillings, or one of you at betting.
6 shillings shalt thou have, and present pay. And liquor likewise will I give to thee. And friendship shall combine, and brotherhood. I'll live by Nim, and Nim shall live by me. Is not this just? For I shall be provider to the wars, and profits will accrue. Give me thy hand.
I shall have my money.
In cash, most justly paid.
Ah. Well, then, that's the humour of it.
Husband, as ever you came of women, come in quickly to Sir John. Our poor heart, he's so shaked of a burning quotidian tertian that it's most lamentable to behold. Sweet men, come to him.
Yeah, the king hath run bad humours on the night, that's the even of it.
Nim, thou hast spoke the right. His heart is fracted and corroborate.
King is a good king, but it must be as it may. I pass his some humours and career.
Let us console the knight. For lambkins, we will live!
Bardolph, be blithe. Nim, rouse thy vaunting veins. Boy, bristle thy courage up. For Falstaff is dead.
Would I were with him, wheresoe'er he is, either in heaven or in hell.
Nay, sure, he's not in hell. He's in Arthur's bosom. If ever man went to Arthur's bosom. He made a finer end and went away, and it had been any Christom child. Departed in just between 12 and 1. In at the turning of the tide. For after I saw him fumble with the sheets, play with flowers, and smile upon his fingers' ends, I knew there was but one way. For his nose was as sharp as a pen, and a babbled of green fields. How now, Sir John, quoth I, what man be a good cheer? So I cried out, God, 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 3 or 4 times. Now I to comfort him, bid him, he should not think of God. I hope there was no need to trouble himself with any such thoughts yet. So I bade me lay more clothes on his feet. I put my hand into the bed and felt them, and they were as cold as any stone. Then I felt to his knees, and so upward and upward, and all was as cold as any stone.
They say he cried out a sack.
Aye, that I did.
End of women.
Nay, that I did not.
Yes, that I did.
and said there were devils incarnate.
I could never abide carnation. 'Twas a colour it never liked.
They said once the devil would have him about women.
He did, in some sort indeed, handle women. But then he was rheumatic and talked to the whore of Babylon.
Do you remember I saw a flea stick up on Bardolph's nose? And I said it was a black soul burning in hell.
Well, the fuel is gone that maintained that fire. That's all the riches I got in his service.
Shall we, Shog? The king will be gone from Southampton.
Come, let's away. My love, give me thy lips. Look to my chattels and my movables. Trust none, for hold fast is the only dog me duck.
Go,
clear thy crystals. Yoke fellows in arms, touch a soft mouth and march.
Farewell, hostess.
I cannot kiss. That's the humour of it. But adieu.
Farewell. Adieu.
Let us to France like horse leeches, my boys. To suck.
To suck. The very blood to suck.
In episode 12 of Vivat Rex, the cast was as follows. The storyteller, Richard Burton. Henry V, Martin Jarvis. Justice Shallow, Roy de Treece. Falstaff, Anthony Quayle. Davy, James Thomason. Warwick, Alan Rowe. Lord Chief Justice, Robert Harris. Prince John of Lancaster, Colin Baker. Clarence, Geoffrey Collins. Gloucester, Bernard Hepton. Justice Silence, Richard Goulden. Bardolph, Timothy Bateson. Pistol, John Hollis. Archbishop of Canterbury, Cyril Shapps. Exeter, Brian Haynes. Westmoreland, David Graham. Ambassador of France, William Eagle. Chorus, Paul Schofield. Nim, Malcolm Hayes. Mistress Quickly, June Whitfield. Falstaff's page, Crispin Gilbart. Music composed by Christopher Whelan. Produced and directed by Jerry Jones.